You may be looking for brains, but you have found Nutty Bites.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases and Epic fans. Today we've got a special for you. This is an Epic and Nutty Bites crossover.
Hello and welcome to Epic.
There we go. You'll probably hear some cool theme music if you're listening to Epic. And if you're listening to Nutty Bites, you're like, what music? Okay. Today, we've got a special guest with us. We've got Michael Dougherty from ZCon.
Hey, how are you?
ZCon is a new movie that's coming up, and it's in pre-production right now, correct?
It is. We're actually getting ready to go into our big stage of crowdfunding from October 1st to November 1st.
Excellent. Excellent. During the week that Comic-Con was going on, I was watching the video that I don't know if it's meant to be viral or whatever, that there's a video about the premise of your movie, which is basically some podcasters go to a convention and there's a zombie outbreak.
Correct.
This would be really cool if you screen this during some kind of convention.
Ooh, are you planning on doing something like that?
Yeah, my ultimate goal is to take this around and basically take it to conventions primarily and then do some theaters. But ultimately, like, if my ultimate goal with this is if I can make people as afraid of going to conventions and not bathing as people were of the water when they saw Jaws for the first time, I will be very, very happy. So the premise of ZCon is kind of like, what if con crud created zombies?
Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Crud zombies.
I wonder if the 3-2-1 would save you from zombieism. Do you know about the 3-2-1, Michael?
No, tell me about it.
Okay, the 3-2-1 rule of cons is, I believe it was started by Merle Afferty, but it's you need 3 hours of sleep, 2 meals a day, and 1 shower a day. And most people have expanded it to really be 5-2-1, but 3-2-1 is easier to remember. So you need 5 hours of sleep, 2 meals a day, 1 shower a day, and you're good. If you miss that, you are going to get the crud.
See, I would almost say it's 5-2-2 because some people just need that extra time in the shower.
This is true. I will say that Balticon, which is one of my favorite conventions, it's in May. It's in Maryland. I am known to take many a shower because it's just way too hot, especially under all of those costumes.
Well, were you at the last Balticon?
Yes, I was.
Then we were at the same place at the same time.
You know, this happens all the time. I end up talking to people on the podcast that I've somehow run into. Do you remember a plague doctor walking around at all?
Yes.
That would be my husband and other co-host who's not in the studio with us today.
Very cool.
And I would be the semi-green-haired freak next to him.
Being the green-haired freak next to the plague doctor is almost a brilliant plan because people are like, what is her costume? They just don't know.
That's true. Sometimes I'm in costume, sometimes I'm not, but I'm always me. So that's fantastic. So next year we're going to have to get together, get some drinks.
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
Maybe I'll be there.
Really?
It would be my first con if I went.
That would be fantastic. You could bring the family.
I could bring the family. I could dress up my little girl as like some kind of teeny little zombie.
You could.
A zomblet.
All right, folks, you heard it here first. Mark Cabot's going to be going to Balticon next year.
Oh, no, don't sign any.
that's fantastic. So conventions you want to screen this at, do you have any in mind yet?
Our convention schedules circle around start and end with DragonCon, which is in Atlanta where I'm at right now. And then we go into like New York Comic Con and Granite State Comic Con, Baltimore Comic Con, going all the way around to San Diego Comic-Con and then back around and everything in between. Like, no convention is too small. Awesome. Anybody that'll have us will go too.
So Balticon's on there, I'm assuming.
Balticon, Shoreleave, Farpoint, all the ones that range from like 50 people to 50,000 people.
That's awesome.
What am I trying to get into?
Now, selfishly, is there any way we could get you to come up to Canada and go to HalCon?
When is that?
It's generally in around the Halloween weekend. If not, it's around Veterans Weekend, as Americans know it, Remembrance Day weekend, as Canadians know it, and it's in Halifax. It's a really fun con, and like I said, selfishly, because we're 6 hours away.
Definitely next year. Yeah. This year, that'll be going on right at the same time that we're doing crowdfunding. So my head will be kind of down and focused on that because crowdfunding is a full-time job doing it.
I assumed this whole, screening wouldn't happen until next year anyway.
The schedule goes as this, is that we're pushing out the proof of concept video, which is at youhavebeeninfected.com. Through October 1st, we're going to do really, really aggressive crowdfunding from October 1st to right around November 1st. Once that's successful, we'll go right into pre-production. Actually, production, because we've gotten majority of the stuff done thanks to our Kickstarter campaign from last year. Film in June, because all of our primary actors are about 16 years old. And we have to wait for them to get out of high school.
That helps.
And then July, August for editing, September for a rough cut. October, we should be completely done.
I'm looking forward to it because from what I've seen so far, just with the teaser video and the Kickstarter video from last year, it looks really interesting and it looks like you guys have a good sense of humor.
I have an amazing sense of humor. I mean, so much so that I'm willing to take out a toddler.
Wait, what?
Okay, in the proof of concept, there's the little girl that turns around and... I don't want to spoil it because it seems to be a lot of people's favorite moment because it goes in a direction you don't expect it to be. But I want to play up the laughs of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll have to take a look at that.
I thought I saw something about some charities. 80% of the proceeds going to charity. Was I correct in that?
100% of the proceeds will go to charity.
100%. Okay.
That's 100% of the net proceeds. So once the movie is done, paid for itself, and all the things that we need to market it are paid for, we did this with our last film, Browncoats Redemption, and made $117,000 for charity in 1 year.
So you are the guys behind Browncoats Redemption. I missed that click. I somehow messed up in my research. That is awesome. So I've heard your voice before many a time.
Oh, thank you.
I was listening to all sorts of interviews and so forth when you were doing Browncoats Redemption. I'm a big fan of The Signal and everything else like that. And when I watched it, it was so much fun because I'm like, hey, I know that person. Hey, I know that person. Hey, I know that person.
Yeah, I just saw Les from The Signal earlier today.
Oh, cool.
Can you tell us a little bit about the charities that you're going to be giving to?
Absolutely. So it's Baltimore. We have three charities. The first is, because it's zombies, we went with a blood-based charity, which is the American Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
They're at every convention that I see doing blood drives, and it only makes sense. Because there's a little bit of a geeky subculture to the convention section, we have Kids Need to Read, which was co-founded by Nathan Fillion and PJ Harzma. Denise and Debbie and those guys over there doing an amazing job. And then we have a third charity, which is Baltimore Bully Crew. They rescue dogs for dog fighting and rehabilitate them. And then the last 20% is actually going to our nonprofit, which is Big Damn Films. And what that will allow us to do is make sure that we're not constantly going back to our backers and asking for more money. It just allows us to have that little bit of a cushion so that we can continue to move forward, because this thing kind of gets expensive after a while.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
I saw the video of you doing the makeup for an entire warehouse of people.
Yeah, it was about 200 and some odd people over the course of a weekend.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like quite the operation, too.
The big thing was I wanted a little bit of realism in there. I wanted it to be... I hate those zombie movies where you have just the random zombies in there that look like what is that? It's like a guy with a piece of meat stuck on his face. So Vince Calora, who is the effects master for the film, we sat down and we blocked out the five phases of infection from you got the sniffles all the way to a full-blown zombie. And the reason we did that is it justifiably explains having every different type of zombie that you've seen in different types of movies. So, when they're a fresh zombie, they're going to be fast, like 28 days in zombies, but not like superhuman speed. If you were a heavy guy like me when you were human, you're not going to be able to sprint like a marathon runner as a zombie. All the way down to like the ones that haven't been eaten in a while, and they're just kind of slow and shambling, like the walkers and the Romero zombies.
I like that. It's very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the whole idea, is that this virus happens very quickly. Everything in the movie happens very, very quickly. So you get the opportunity to see as many different styles of zombies as you possibly can.
And the infection, is it by bite?
It is the same way that con crud goes. I mean, it's like, you know, if 2,000 people touching the same thing at a convention will inevitably get everybody sick. But, you know, bites will do it, and just kind of the same way that a virus would be spread as if the common cold, but a little bit more aggressive.
Nice.
Well, I could see how you could play around with that, just having pictures of, like, people at the Comic-Con doing their normal Comic-Con thing, kind of wiping their nose, touching the hand railing, and then somebody coming up behind them touching that same hand railing and just watching the infection spread, as Comic-Con crud does.
I'm just thinking of, like, people putting on costume makeup or wigs or whatever.
We have this opening montage in the beginning of the movie that basically shows, like, the guy comes in and he sneezes on his hand, and then he touches comics, and the next guy touches comics, and then he takes it and gets a picture with a cosplay girl, and then she takes it and goes and gets a picture with Scylla. So you can see how quickly those types of things spread. And it's the same speed that, like, the normal flu virus would spread, but you just... because you're associating zombies with it, it just makes it that much more creepy.
After hearing you say that, I'm actually happy I'm not at Dragon Con this weekend. I mean, geez, that's just another thing to get scared of. I mean, right here at the radio station, we have those hand sanitizers at, like, every doorway. They're all over, and we've got signs saying, you know, people at radio stations are highly susceptible to spreading diseases like the H1N1. And all I'm thinking is con crud now. I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not in Dragon Con.
I'm a huge Alfred Hitchcock fan, and part of his whole big thing was creating experiences. Like, you know, when they did Psycho, he basically molded the theater experience so people just wanted to stay in their seats. So when we take this around to conventions, I've got Z-Con branded Purell that as soon as somebody comes out of the showing, I want to just hand them bottles of Purell.
That's awesome.
And just see what they do, see how quickly they want to clean their hands.
They'll just start rubbing it all over their bodies.
Like, I want to take a Purell bath.
Be like, I feel dirty.
You should see if you can get a corporate sponsorship.
I think that would be brilliant.
That would be.
You should seed some sick acting people in the audience.
Oh, dude.
Have somebody randomly sneeze.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if this is playing at Balticon, I'm totally going to start with, like, the sniffles. I might show up with, like, maybe do some latex, put some latex on my face and, like, start pulling it off during the showing. Like, that would be a lot of fun.
There's added marketing. Somebody just randomly sitting in the dead center of the theater, surrounded by everybody, coughing and sneezing, and just waiting for sheer panic to set in.
Absolutely, absolutely. You should have seen me at the screening for the 95ers at Balticon this year. I mean, I went all out, so I'm really looking forward. And I didn't even know what that movie was about, and I'm really looking forward to going all out for Z-Con. So that'll be a blast.
Very, very cool.
Death must come to us all. If you're lucky, it will come for you quietly in the dead of night. If you're like the people filling the pages of the horror anthology Dead Ends, it will take the most unpleasant forms. Vengeful ghosts, hungry shadows, bloodthirsty demons, alien life forms, and disease-crazed psychopaths await you between its bullet-riddled covers. Pray that these stories by award-winning authors and visionaries in the horror genre will only terrify you. Buy it now at Amazon and Smashwords, and make sure that you read it with the lights on, secure in the knowledge that your money will go to charity, even as you question what it was that just tapped on your window or scratched at your door.
Nutty debate!
So we're going to debate what is the best zombies. You know, what are your favorite zombies? What's your favorite style of zombie?
I'm really torn, man. I think The Walking Dead is actually doing it right. They have all different kinds. I kind of think that there's got to be the Romero zombie that has the, like, slow shuffle that it's so painfully slow. You're like, just please let it end. And then you've got the 28 days infected zombies, which are just flat out scary because they're purely feral. They're going to completely take you out. So one of those two, like, I think it's a tie for me between those two. TV shows like The Walking Dead, which incorporate a little bit of both.
Yeah, yeah. Mark?
Me? Let's see. Well, I'm a scientist at heart, you know that. So there are certain things about zombies that kind of have me scratching my head. The slow, shambling zombies, you know, when it's a post-apocalyptic world and they've somehow taken over everything, especially the ones that only infect on a bite, but yet they seem to consume everything. So then you're like, well, how are they leaving zombies behind if they're consuming all of, you know, the people and not biting and moving on? And how do they catch up with them in the first place? Because they're slow and shambling. I mean, at the beginning, you're probably like, what's going on? You walk up to them and you get bitten, of course, and that's how it happens. But I'd like to think the military could probably take care of slow, shambling zombies. But there was this discussion earlier about how you were doing it in your Z-Con, where at first they have this burst of energy and they're probably more feral, like World War Z, which has got tons of problems. I'm not even going to go near that right now.
You're talking about the book, not the movie. The movie didn't exist.
The World War Z?
Yeah.
I did not read the book, but the movie's got some issues. The law of thermodynamics for one of them, but I'm not even going to go into that. but, you know, you get that burst at the beginning. So when you're quick and you're fast at the very, very beginning, then you might be biting and moving on and infecting. Or just, you know, slobbering all over somebody and moving on. At that point, it's fine. So you're infecting, but then you get to the slow, like shambling stage. So the fast ones take you down and move on, but the slow shambling ones come up behind and rip you apart because...
And they're the ones that eat
They're the ones that are hungry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the science that we came up with, is that the fast-moving ones... You know, they're only fast as long as they're ingesting the protein of human body, you know, and it's not the brains. It's if you go back to Romero, it was literally the whole body. Like, brains didn't come in until like 1983 or 84.
Oh, yeah. You need all the Soylent.
So it's like, you know, it's the fast ones will come in and just consume what they need to, and then they move on to the next attack. But then the slow ones, like you said, will be the ones that come in and just treat you like a buffet. And the way that we looked at it is the reason that they're slow is they're slow for one of two reasons. They're weak from not being able to eat, and they're inevitably going to die, which they become the crawlers from The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Or they've eaten so much that they're just kind of engorged and their body's processing it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Well, I never thought of that second one.
Mm.
They're kind of like post-turkey dinner.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're the tryptophan zombies.
Exactly, right. The tryptophan zombies. So I'm going to go completely on a departure here because just because I have to be different. I think one of my favorite zombies are the Borg.
The Borg.
Yes, the Borg.
So cyber zombies, more or less.
Oh, but they are zombies. Think about it.
They're hive zombies.
But what do they do?
Oh, they assimilate.
They will attack you and assimilate you. Their goal is to turn everyone into Borg.
You know what? And the original Borg were very slow and methodical in the way they moved, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you think about it, that is a really nice comparison.
I came up with it a few years ago in the middle of a debate about something. I don't remember what. And ever since then, I'm like, the Borg are the best zombies. I'm actually thinking, we've got a zombie walk this weekend to raise money for the food bank. And I'm actually thinking of Borgifying myself a little bit. I don't know. I'm not sure if I've got enough... hose to do it, but I think it could be fun.
You could do a Borg zombie crossover, so a decaying Borg.
Yeah, that was my plan. I was gonna have it where I'm decaying, but I've got like hoses coming out of me and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I've been disconnected from the hive.
I've got a box. I've got a box of old electrical stuff at home you can borrow.
Awesome. See, there we go. Teamwork. So yeah, that is one of my favorites. And I'm going to also have to throw out there that one of my favorite zombie movies is Shaun of the Dead, because I describe that as the perfect date movie.
It is.
I've been out of the dating game for a long time, but I don't. Yeah, maybe. Sure. Okay.
I saw it after I was married, but
it's.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. He's going to say what I'm thinking.
You think about it. You have, like, you're straight up kind of buddy movie, so there's a lot of laughs there to be had. There's pop culture references. So if they laugh at that, you know that they're in. But if they can go all the way through and handle the gore at the end, it's like, that is like the litmus test of a perfect date.
Well, and not only that, the subject matter that happens, like the whole drama unfolding, is very relevant to most relationships. You know, she doesn't like his friend. He doesn't like her friends. But in the end, she figures out, no, his friend is a good guy. And if I want to love him, I have to love his friend as well. And they also realize, you know, throughout the end that, yes, he was right. Her friend was just trying to get them to break up because he liked her.
Yeah.
And those are things that happen all the time. And it's just perfect date movie. And it's got a romantic arc in there. There you go.
The Coronado trilogy, if you really look at the stories, that they're not just like a zombie story and a cop story,
right,
and apocalypse story. There's like so much subtext that is just layered in there perfectly. But that's besides the point. We're talking about zombies.
Yes, that is besides the point. But if I were dating and a guy brought me to that, I would be like, he's a keeper.
There you go.
Yes. So what are some other really great zombies? Or if you want to come up with some dishonorable mentions, like maybe some types of zombies you really don't like.
So, have you seen the movie Fido with Billy Connolly?
No.
Oh, my God. Please watch this movie.
Okay.
It is awesome.
I like Billy Connolly.
The premise is that it's like the 1950s, but it's not like the 1950s. It's the Leave It to Beaver style 1950s where everything's kind of like, gee, sir, yay, kind
so
of a world.
So it's Pleasantville.
Can't be.
Exactly. But it's post-zombie apocalypse Pleasantville. So they figured out a way to control the zombies with neck collars, and they have the zombies doing menial labor.
That's awesome.
And Billy Connolly plays this zombie that belongs to a family, and the son names him Fido and basically treats him like his best friend. So majority of the time, he's like slow and shambling and kind of klutzy, and, you know, but he's very aware. So if you're familiar with like Bud from Dawn of the Dead and all of those mm-hmm. movies, so it's like a slightly aware zombie, almost like Warm Bodies,
right?
Without the voiceover narration. But he, like, when he's angry or enraged, he just speeds up, and it becomes like instant aggression. And I think that's a really, really good zombie because it shows that it's not just mindlessly moving forward. It just shows when it needs to, it's going to attack you.
Yeah, that definitely works. Plus, they're controlled by collars, so you can say, not only is it a good zombie, but good zombie, good zombie, good zombie.
I find there's a lot of movies lately that oversimplify the zombie mechanic, so to speak. It's always they're crazy fast and they're running all the time, or they're crazy slow and they're shambling, and you could like outrun them with a light sprint, but yet somehow the world has fallen to them. So it's nice to see people put more thought into it.
Well, I have this really interesting T-shirt that I can't remember where I think I got it at a convention. And it has six lines, and it's done with stick figures. So it says humans versus zombies. And on the if you're facing it the right side, it's got a human running away, and he's got this massive kind of lead. And then on the other side, they start showing the zombies kind of creeping in. And as you get down to the bottom of the shirt, as the human gets tired, the zombies just kind of come in, and then by the end just eat them.
Nice.
Because it kind of shows that, like, zombies just don't give up and don't stop, but the human will inevitably get tired and stop moving.
So you're saying they're the tortoise.
Yes.
Exactly. But yes, the zombie plague is the perfect modern-day tortoise hare analogy.
That's awesome.
When my daughter's old enough to hear the tortoise and the hare, I'm going to replace it with zombies and humans.
I should make a children's book, the zombie and the human.
Yes.
So as we were talking about this, I'm reminded of another zombie that I kind of like. You talking about Fido reminded me of it. The zombies that we can put to work. There was an audio drama done by Mer Lafferty called Zomb Inc., and basically, okay. Data entry and cubicle type workers were zombies. And the Zomb Inc. had bought out another company, and they were merging the two. So suddenly humans were working with zombies. And in order to get that promotion you wanted, well, you're going to have to go zombie. And there's this whole like storyline where one of the characters played by J.C. Hutchins has a zombie fetish. And anytime anybody says anything against zombies, he calls them a bigot. It's fantastic.
Nice.
If you haven't listened to it, go look it up. I'm sure it's on Podio Books. It's awesome. But that's another trope of mine that I love when it's like, yeah, we've got zombies, but we put them to use.
There is a trilogy that I read. The first book is called Feed. And I can't remember the author's name. I follow her on Twitter, and I'm going to feel like an asshat for not remembering it. But the idea is kind of the bookend to the premise of my movie, which is the premise of my movie is it's pre-zombie apocalypse, kind of the beginning of the breakout, and these kids are using social media to get the word out. And this is the outbreak has already happened, and they're living in a world where bloggers are now the main newscast.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise of their zombies was that the more zombies that they got together, the smarter that the mind was. So it kind of calls back to your Borg reference.
I was just going to say, that's very Borg-like.
If they gotten into a massive group of them, they could actually plan and they would start to have this pack mentality.
Nice.
Myra Grant, is that the one?
That's it.
Yes, and Feed, it's as in like an RSS feed.
Nice.
Because it's like...
Oh, that cover is fantastic.
Yes, I already want to read this.
That's a great cover.
It's the trilogy is really, really beautiful. It's really well written. It's all first person. But she does an amazing job of explaining that, like, individually, humans just could wipe them out. But when they get into packs, it's like fighting a pack of hyenas.
Nice. I like that.
These are clearly the predecessors of the Borg.
Yes,
this
clearly.
This is where the war came from.
Exactly. They didn't come from V'ger. They came from this. So let's talk about some kinds of zombies. Like you said, Mark, that you don't like zombies where they don't explain it, that it just doesn't make sense.
Well, not that they don't explain it, just that it just, if you think about it for 5 seconds, it doesn't make sense.
Mm. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say, I'm trying to think. There was, I can't remember the movie now, but there was like one movie where they had these, like you said, the crazy fast super strength zombies. They suddenly were superhero, you know, had superpowers, even though they were dead, and they continued to have those superpowers, and it just made no sense. And I'm going to say that as much as it's fun to have a fast zombie, I don't think I like a supernaturally fast zombie.
Well, there's the whole Marvel Zombies comic book series,
mm-hmm.
which kind of plays on that, where the Marvel superheroes become infected. And it started with, like, Ash versus the Marvel Zombies, and that's being Ash from Evil Dead, gets brought into their world, and he brings the zombies with him, and they start infecting. But then the story just goes campy, because it's from the perspective of the superhero zombies.
Ooh, my.
And it's the dialogue that goes back and forth, and the fact that they argue with each other as zombies and just de-evolve is brilliant. But yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think I want my zombies flying around or being the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, well, if it was the Incredible Hulk zombified, though, that is one thing. But I do think that he would actually lose some of his power.
Well, maybe
because he couldn't be angry.
That's probably that's kind of where some of the terror comes from. They're coming for you slowly, but they're coming all the time. No matter where you are, what you're doing, you're sleeping, you're eating, you're doing anything, they're on their way. They're coming to you. They're closing in very slowly.
Are you trying to scare the listeners?
Maybe.
I think that's what you're trying to do.
Well, there's the line from Night of the Living Dead, which just sums it all up, is they're coming to get you, Barbara. Which
yep.
is just nonstop, like you said. The one zombies I hate... Have you ever seen Night of the Comet?
No.
Oh, my God. It's so bad.
don't see it.
I have a really good movie to see and a really bad movie to see now. Fido and Night of the Comet.
Go see Fido. Fido is really good. If you haven't seen Warm Bodies, Warm Bodies is really good. Warm Bodies actually gives you two different types of zombies. And the zombies fight each other, so it's really weird.
Oh, that is interesting. That's on my list. I've heard conflicting things about it. I just like the idea that it looks like they're trying to take zombies in another direction. So I am definitely interested in that. Warm Bodies, for those of you who haven't seen it and don't know what we're talking about, is the one where there's a love story.
It is essentially Romeo and Juliet with zombies.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's got a lot of snarky humor and... I would highly recommend anybody checking it out.
Mm.
Just if you like Shaun of the Dead, this is right up your alley.
Cool.
Night of the Comet came out in the 80s, and it's bad. Like, this comet passes over and turns people into, like, red ash, and the people that aren't red ash are, like, infected. But everybody... here's the problem I have with big zombie movies. Somehow, people with no gun training whatsoever can magically pick up an Uzi and know exactly how to use it.
As a matter of fact, and on the cover art for it is a very 80s chick holding an Uzi.
Oh, my.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, these girls that are supposed to be like valley girls who are like girly girls pick up automatic weapons and are just like have no problem using it. And they're like, what?
Yeah, it just doesn't work that way.
And I'm former military, and it took training for me not to like drop a machine gun when it started like firing multiple times.
You should.
So picking.
Sorry.
Randomly picking up a gun and going is just not going to work.
Perhaps a trope in a movie, if you ever wanted to work it in, was somebody finds a fully automatic weapon and picks it up in a very heroic fashion and points it, but gets something completely wrong and just kills himself.
That would be awesome.
So you've read my script. Because it's set in a comic book convention, which has absolutely no like firearms whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like sees a gun on the ground and he picks it up and it's an airsoft gun.
Okay.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And he just gets taken out left and right.
Mm.
That's awesome.
And that's part of the thing I wanted to play up. I wanted to play up some of the tropes of stuff that just are completely impractical. Like the human that never gets tired fighting zombies and just can massively beat everybody else. Like, no, you're bound to get tired.
Yeah. Speaking of all of that, there's always the, like, even The Walking Dead is guilty of it sometimes, where, you know, you've got these people and they're using these guns. They never clean them. They never service them. They never have to do anything to make sure that they continue to work well.
I think you have just brought up an amazing offshoot series for The Walking Dead that I've been thinking about for a long time, because if you noticed, not only are their guns perfect, but their cars are always clean.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well...
So I think...
Except for the Winnebago.
Well, if you notice, they drive around that little Toyota.
Yeah.
It's a 2013 yep. Toyota, and the apocalypse happened in 2010.
Exactly. But I think that there's an offshoot show, like The Walking Dead, The Cleaners, that is literally just 10 guys that go around town to town and they're like, hey, give us some food and we'll clean your cars.
Oh, and they must be the ones that mow the grass too.
Exactly. They mow the grass, they clean the guns, they clean the cars, and all they want is like some canned food, which explains why Rick never has canned food, because he's always giving it away for clean guns and clean cars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Either that or there's a subset of zombies that do that.
If I were to argue for them,
mm-hmm.
Play devil's advocate here for a second. They try to fire their guns as little as possible.
That is true. They do that. But regardless, you can't, you know, fire your gun once or twice and then just let it sit there for a week and then expect it to be hunky-dory. Like, you've got to clean it after you use it.
I wish we had Tech here.
I know. He's at home. That's our the plague doctor, by the way, is also our weapons expert.
Nice.
That's what he does by trade. He is a weapons technician. So, but yes, it drives me nuts. You know, you see them, and like you said, they shoot from the hip, and they're always accurate for some reason. They never service their guns. They never take care of them, and somehow it all works. And often, you see in video games and things, they're carrying multiple guns. Does anybody have any idea how heavy these things are?
Well, how does Daryl keep getting his arrows back? Because they never show him going back and retrieving them. He just blasts through people and then goes on to the next place. But amazingly, he has the never-ending quiver that I always wanted when I was playing D&D.
Yeah.
So, what would you say is your worst, in your mind, the biggest zombie sin that movies are guilty of?
I think the biggest zombie sin that movies are guilty of is completely eliminating any kind of intelligence from these creatures. Because they're human, so they're still going to have some kind of, like, feral, at least animalistic behavior. Mm-hmm. But to just make them, like, shambling and stupid is just, ugh.
So, kind of like, what was the movies? They I'm trying to think of the name of the movies. They rapidly got really, really, really bad. Resident Evil.
Yes.
So, the early... Sorry.
No, I was just to say, like, that entire series, not just for the fact that it completely destroyed my interest in playing the video games anymore, but, like, they treated the zombies so bad in that. Mm-hmm. I was just like, why? It's just cannon fodder. You're really... This is an entire movie of you just shooting things.
And getting cut up and destroyed in various ways.
Exactly.
So we're going to form PETES, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Zombies?
PETA. I like it.
Yeah, I did notice that the dogs, I think, were probably the most scariest zombies in those movies because they still had that feral instinct. They wanted to feed and, you know, but I mean, humans, we have that ingrained in our brains as well.
Yeah.
To feed, to hunt.
Exactly.
And why not bring that out? And a human can be very, very, very cunning. So mm-hmm. if you keep that intact, you can make the zombies that much more terrifying.
I was watching an episode of Fringe, I think it was. And it wasn't exactly zombieism, but the virus took a hold of the person's brain and actions and motivations. So they had all of their brains, all of their cunning, all of their skill, but were working to achieve the evil objective. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking, zombies, like, that's they would use our knowledge, wouldn't they? Like, they'd have access to it. They'd know how to get through a locked door. We know how to unlock doors.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think zombies for me are the, if you take morals away from human beings and you take the willingness to survive at all costs as the primary goal, that is a zombie. That's like your perfect zombie, is that they no longer care about what's right. They no longer care about what's wrong. Their whole purpose is to feed, and anything in their way is just dead.
That is scary.
And you know what? You see that with certain drugs and stuff like that. It changes the priority in a person's mm-hmm. brain. We have an innate priority of, you know, family and have you ever seen the pyramid of priorities mm-hmm. or whatever? But there's certain drugs that you can take that will chemically reshuffle those priorities in your brain to the point where the drug is up there, number one.
Ooh, what about a zombie drug?
Well, you're going back to... kind of the whole Resident Evil thing, aren't you?
Ah, I don't know. Those movies were just a showcase for everyone to see how hot Mila Jovovich was, right?
I think so. And then any other female that was in the movie with her, they're just like, let's make them equally attractive, yet amazing weapons experts.
Their uniforms show an intense amount of cleavage for some reason.
It helps you shoot better. As a woman, I can tell you, a push-up bra makes me much more accurate. Sorry, I tried to say that with a straight face.
I'm not even going to touch it. I'm leaving it alone.
I'm the only one that can say that. On this call, I am the only person who can say that.
Yeah, you are.
All right, so any other special honorable mentions before we close this up?
Not that I can think of. I think going back to the old school zombies probably is a really, really smart idea, but remembering that they're still intelligent. I think getting, like, I'm kind of exhausted of the hack and slash zombie movies.
Where they're just fodder.
Yeah, I think those type of zombies where they're literally just, you know, you put another one up and they're just like paper targets for the characters. Mm-hmm. That's my big sin. But there's too many of those movies that do that for me to list just one.
I find zombie movies are going towards gore porn.
Yeah.
It's not really cerebral anymore, which is kind of why I'm excited to see your movie, because it seems like you have a much different outlook on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's getting back to like Romero style storytelling, which is kind of what Shaun of the Dead is, which there's more of a social commentary than it's, and the zombies are just the thing that are happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm. One thing I want to make an honorable mention of, which was quite gory, but over the top gory, is the Evil Dead movies and the Army of Darkness. More though, like Evil Dead 2 and so forth, where, you know, blood was just absolutely spewing. I think that that is one of the more accessible zombie movies, because they were undead, you know, they were called zombites. No.
Deadites.
Deadites, that's it. Deadites. Like, it's not zombites. That's not right. Deadites. But essentially, they are zombies. And like you said, they have a purpose. They were trying to do something. And I think one of my favorite parts is when the woman is in the basement and they got the chains on the basement and she's switching between the zombie version and looking human. I think that is one of my favorite bits. Yeah.
I saw the preview of her with the X-Acto knife on the tongue, and I did not go see it.
Well, I'm not talking about the new one.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the originals with all the camp.
Oh, okay.
That's why I think it's accessible, because I think, you know, people who are not into zombie movies can go see those. The radio station held a movie marathon last spring, and we had quite a few people who had never seen the movies, because they said, well, I don't like zombie movies because I don't like scary movies. But when they heard us talk about how the Evil Dead movies were really camp and funny, they were willing to actually go and see them. So I like a little humor with my zombies.
Would you allow us to put on a showing of your Z-Con movie here in Fredericton?
Ooh.
Absolutely.
We would be very, very interested to do that.
Yeah, that would be great.
I'd be very, very honored to have that happen.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that hopefully a little bit more coming up. Can you give us some dates on to when this movie should be made publicly available?
The first date that is the most important to me is the date of October 1st, 2013. That's when we launch our Indiegogo campaign for the feature length of the film.
Mm-hmm.
That'll allow us to do all the fundings that we need for the warehouse spaces and things like that. We're doing something pretty cool that nobody's ever done before, which is, because this is set in the geek culture and we geeks like are exclusives and like having our firsts, anybody that backs the campaign in the first week gets a backer exclusive t-shirt designed by Adam Levermore, who did all the work, a lot of design work for Felicia Day and a bunch of different people in the geek world today.
That's cool. So the first week, you've got to get in on the first week to get
absolutely.
That t-shirt. That is awesome.
And the link.
It's going to be Indiegogo. So if you go to Big Damn Heroes, Big Damn Films.
Right now, everything's going to go through youhavebeninfected.com.
You told us that.
If you go there right now, you'll see our proof of concept and you'll see an email sign up. That way you can make sure you're one of the first ones to get a t-shirt. Because we're going to let everybody know a couple days ahead of time so they can prime their email finger. And then once that's done, starting in November, we're going to do all our pre-production, get our team ready, get the storyboards ready, get everything ready so that we can film in June. And the other cool thing that we're doing is part of our Indiegogo campaign. We're going to have tons of cool things, like you could actually be a featured extra where we're going to fly you out and put you in a hotel, and you'll have one day where you're treated like a rock star and you're going to be either a featured human, you know, extra or a featured zombie, so you get your face on the screen.
Where are you filming?
Maryland.
Ah, fantastic. I had a feeling, but I just wanted to make sure.
So we're going to try to publish this episode on Epic, on Nutty Bites, and on the Lunchbox here at CHSR towards mid to late September, so people can, unless you have different plans.
Oh, this is probably going to go to Nutty Bites first, but it will launch on the radio station mid-September, sure.
Yeah, I'm going to try to launch it mid-September, late September, so that people could be, if you're listening to this on the air or through my RSS feed or my podcast or my website, you could head on over to the youhavebeninfected.com, especially if it's October 1st. Get in on this. You heard all the awesome things that are coming up. You don't want to miss out on this. This sounds like a tremendous opportunity, especially if you want to be a zombie for a day.
Exactly.
And be immortalized as a zombie on the big screen And hopefully we'll have a screening of that here in Fredericton, too.
That would be great. One thing I wanted to say, though, about your crowdfunding project, the Kickstarter that you did for the pre-production got a nice shout out from Neil Gaiman because he said that you were doing crowdfunding right. By anybody that had donated $15 would get the movie. Are you going to be doing that again with the Indiegogo campaign?
We are. And so the first option to back is going to be $5, which is just going to be a digital download of the movie. I think, I don't know if anybody's familiar with what Louis C.K. did with his comedy tour. But what he did is he kind of bucked the system and he filmed an entire show, did it exclusively for the people that wanted it and made it available. So if you gave him $5, you got to have a digital download of the DVD and then the digital artwork so you could make your own Louis C.K. DVD. In addition, that he gave you the option to stream it like 5 times online. So we're going to take that same model. So no matter who you are, you could come into the movie and back $5 and you automatically get a digital copy.
Wow, $5 and you get the movie. That's amazing. That is amazing.
There is no reason not to give.
There is no reason not to give $5.
You get more than $5 back. This is an instant investment, in my opinion.
I agree.
And the other cool thing is you get your name in the credits, and because we're a nonprofit organization, 100% of your contribution to the campaign is tax deductible.
That is true.
And your money's probably going to be going to a good cause on top of everything else.
Yeah, well, not probably. We heard the good causes. Those are all good causes.
Yeah, so there you go. Give your money to a good cause, give $5 to a good cause, and get an awesome movie.
That's fantastic. Is there anything else you want us to know?
No, I think we've said you guys have been amazing. Thank you.
No, this has been fun. Thank you for chatting with us, even through all of the little technical detail difficulties. But we had a great time having you on here. We'd love to have you come up to HowlCon maybe next year. I look forward to seeing you at Balticon this year, and I can't wait for this movie to come out. This is very exciting.
Well, and I'm so happy to have been a part of the show. Like, anytime you guys want me to come back, I will. 30 seconds. I'll just jump on. It's
all right. Well, we'll hold you to that. We will get you back. You're coming back.
Sorry, you might be sorry you said that.
No, absolutely. You are welcome anytime. And
we'll definitely try to get some kind of post-production follow-up on you.
Oh, absolutely. So thank you so much. And you have been listening to Mark Nutty and Michael Doherty. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it. Don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.